The following Burl Report podcast is made possible through support from Biotech 2012, Innovating in the New Austerity, Burl & Company's 26th annual report on the life sciences industry, available now by clicking the ad on this page or going to burlandco.com.
I'm Daniel Levine, and this is the Burl Report.
The personal genetics company 23andMe said it has delivered its first round of 510K documentation to the Food and Drug Administration in an effort to win FDA clearance for aspects of its personal genome service. The company says it is the first in the industry to announce it's working towards the FDA clearance. We spoke to Dan Vorhaus, editor of the Genomics Law Report and an attorney with Robinson Bradshaw & Hinson, about 23andMe's decision to seek FDA clearance, why the company is taking the unusual step, and what the regulatory process might look like for 23andMe and others that follow.
Dan, thanks for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure.
So the personal genetics company 23andMe is asking the FDA to approve a genetic testing service that may help people gauge their risk for developing diseases such as cancer and Alzheimer's, whether they carry certain diseases, and whether they'd respond to certain drugs. It says it's the first company in the industry to work with the FDA for such a clearance. Can you put this in perspective for us? How significant is this?
Well, a couple of things. I think that they have not yet asked the FDA to clear their entire product, but what they have done is submitted seven different tests, so presumably for seven of the, I think they have somewhere around 240 some odd health reports at the moment as part of their service. And so they're going through part of their service with the FDA. They have indicated, I've seen some comments in the press, they haven't said exactly which seven that they've submitted to the FDA for review first, but I've seen comments from the company saying that they want to get to up to 100 by the end of this year. So I do think it's significant. I do not think any of their competitors in what you would consider consumer genetics or personal genetics or direct-to-consumer genetics have done anything like this, and I think 23andMe is well aware of that. They're certainly not the only company working with the FDA to obtain approval or seek to obtain approval for diagnostic or interpretive type claims based on genetic information, whether we're talking about SNP data or others. But I think it is an important development. It's something that 23andMe has been probably had in the works for quite some time. I know they've been talking with the FDA pretty much since their inception and talking quite seriously with them for several years now. And it may represent the way forward for certain components of the DTC industry, and it really may presage something even more significant for how multiplex and even whole genome diagnostics are thought of and reviewed by the FDA moving forward down the road.
So the DTC industry suffered a blow a few years back. There was the GAO report, the FTC raising questions among consumers about both the quality and reliability of the information that this industry was providing. Is this in part an effort to build credibility with consumers?
I think so. I'm sure that 23andMe will have their own take on that, but looking at what they've said to the media in discussing the FDA submission and in light of, like you said, the GAO report and the FDA letters that were sent out back in the summer of 2010, almost exactly 2 years ago now, I think there was some real skepticism that was created both among the public, but even more importantly among policymakers and professionals in this field about what these tests really were all about, whether they were valuable, whether they were just junk. And I think for many people, whether or not the product itself has actually changed, getting it through an FDA review process, even if it's one that's a little bit tailored for 23andMe, and I think that is part of what's going on here, is the FDA and 23andMe trying to work together to figure out how to review a a product like this that's fairly different from what the FDA has seen so far, I do think that that can have a validating effect for 23andMe in the eyes of its potential customers and in the eyes of thought leaders, opinion leaders, policymakers in the field that have been, many of whom have been quite critical of the DTC model.
So 23andMe is seeking 510K clearance. Can you explain what that is, how high a threshold is there for that, and how clear is it what they're going to have to demonstrate to the FDA to pass muster?
Well, my understanding is that they're seeking a de novo 510K, which is basically when the FDA says, and they've determined with the FDA, what you are submitting to us is something that is not similar to anything that we've seen before. There is essentially no substantially equivalent predicate device upon which you could base a normal 510K review, but we don't think it's a substantially high-risk device, a really risky device, so we're willing to allow you to seek approval under the slightly less restrictive, less onerous 510K clearance pathway as opposed to a full pre-market approval, which is what the highest risk devices require. Now, what form that's actually going to take, I don't know. That's something that they're working out with the FDA. They've made reference to using studies published in the literature to help support their review. So I am guessing that they're probably not going out and conducting new trials, gathering new data to necessarily revalidate all of the tests that they're submitting for approval. But I really don't know, and that's not something that either the company or the FDA will talk about at this time. The FDA obviously has seen the submission now, but they're going to have some time to respond, and they will probably have further questions, further requests for the company. So I expect it to be an iterative process, as it usually is.
Is the expectation that in tandem with the FDA, that they'll be essentially creating a pathway for other companies to follow?
Well, I think that's certainly a possibility. One of the advantages for 23andMe of being first to do something like this is they get to talk about how they're first. One of the advantages for everybody else is they hopefully get to see how it works for 23andMe. The FDA gets education, a lot of that on 23andMe's dime, and presumably there will be people that can then follow in 23andMe's footsteps. On the DTC side, I'm not exactly sure who that is. There are some other nominal DTC companies out there, but really most of the direct competition to 23andMe has either gone away or never really taken off in the first place. So, but I think long term, yes, both for the DTC type companies and really even for other diagnostic type companies that are not necessarily offering their products directly to consumers in the way that 23andMe does, but might be targeting more of a clinical application or more of a clearly clinical application, might have plenty to learn from this as well. And it's certainly possible that this could presage a shift for 23andMe from really focusing primarily on selling directly to consumers to opening up more of a clinical distribution channel and selling to consumers through their doctors in much the same way that some other companies have done.
And to date, their test has been regulated under what's known as CLIA, the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments Program, which is overseen by CMS. Should the company prevail in winning FDA approval, what will the ramification be for other companies? Is this going to become a de facto standard that doctors and consumers will demand?
Well, I think that if 23andMe goes through the FDA process and makes it through successfully, as I expect that they certainly think they will. I don't think they would have started this process if they didn't see a way forward for the company in a way that they felt comfortable with. But I don't know. It really depends on demand. I think it is possible that other consumers out there might say, well, look, we're not interested in buying a genetic test unless it's been FDA cleared or FDA approved. But I think there are plenty of consumers out there who buy all kinds of things that maybe their doctor wouldn't recommend or the FDA wouldn't recommend. And so the real question is, will consumers care about this? Will clinicians care about this if that's who 23andMe starts to target? Or if that's who other companies are targeting, and they say, well, look, 23andMe could get their test cleared. How come you can't? And also, what will the FDA do? The FDA's largely operated under a policy of enforcement discretion with respect to laboratory-developed tests generally, of which direct-to-consumer genetic tests really are one subset. And if this is the beginning of the long-discussed relaxing or reduction or elimination of enforcement discretion for LDTs, something that the FDA talked about wanting to do also 2 years ago, right at the same time all the DTC conversation was really forefront in Washington, that would indeed be a significant event. But certainly we've not heard anything from the FDA, at least at this point, to indicate that this is the start of something more than just one company coming to them with a request to review a product and to seek clearance.
So separately, 23andMe ignited a bit of a controversy recently when it announced it was receiving a patent on a gene variant related to Parkinson's disease. Isn't this the type of progress customers who allowed the company to use their genetic information in research had hoped for? Why were some customers upset by this?
Well, it wasn't a patent on the variant itself. It's a patent basically on predicting susceptibility to Parkinson's disease based on the presence of certain variants. So it's more of a diagnostic type patent than a pure gene patent. As to your question of why, what customers thought about this and why, I think 23andMe was a little bit conflicted, it seemed to me, on this particular topic. On the one hand, they were, I think, rightfully proud of the model that they have created that allowed them to conduct this research, to identify some novel associations, and to go publish based on that and to ultimately earn a patent based on that work. On the other hand, a lot of that work, as you mentioned, was sort of undergirded by the participation of their customer base in that research. And I think a lot of those people, or at least some vocal minority of those people, perhaps. I don't know if it's even a majority. I'm not sure how you would really know at this point. Felt a little bit confused and maybe a little bit upset by what they perceived as a departure from 23andMe's message of democratizing genomics and really focusing on research and returning data to individuals and to the community, while at the same time obtaining a patent on some of that research and not being, I think part of the problem was not being immediately and very clear about how they intended to use that patent. Were they going to use it to try and limit the types of Parkinson's research or tests that could be performed or developed? What were they going to do with the patent? Why did they even want the patent in the first place? So, I think that uncertainty, ambiguity has been tough for some of their customers.
Do you think they should have worked differently with their customers? Did they blow this one?
Well, I think in my mind, at least at the moment, and 23andMe has changed, as have all companies in the personal genomic space, personal genetic testing space, because it's such a new field. Since 23andMe first broke onto the scene back in 2007, I mean, things have changed so much in terms of the technology, the pricing, the understanding of what the marketplace really looks like and what consumers are interested in. And so 23andMe has shifted around a lot. I think at least at the moment that their most valuable resource is their customer population, their engaged cohort of people who have purchased the test and are willing to come back to 23andMe and to their site and continue to take surveys and participate in research and be a part of the enterprise. And so to me, that seems like that's one of their most valuable resources, maybe their most valuable resource, and trying to understand how the patent announcement and how the framing of that by the company would impact those people, I think is very important. And I don't know if I think 23andMe blew it, but I think that maybe they might, could they do it, could they go back and do it differently? They might have thought a little bit more in advance about how to frame that message, how to talk about their patent in a way that was both appropriately celebratory and, you know, recognizing the work that had gone into obtaining the patent, but also acknowledging all of their customers that enabled that work to be performed.
Dan Voorhaus, editor of the Genomics Law Report and an attorney at Robinson, Bradshaw & Hinson. Dan, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And a reminder to our listeners that Biotech 2012, Innovating in the New Austerity, Burl & Company's 26th annual report on the life sciences industry, is now available. You can purchase the book or download a free chapter by clicking on the ad on this podcast page or going to burlandco.com. That's burlandco.com. Thanks for listening. For information on Burl & Company conferences and publications, go to burlandco.com. That's burlandco.com. And be sure to join us at burlreport.com for daily coverage of the life sciences industry. And sign up for our free e-newsletter, the Burl Weekly Brief, by hitting the sign-in link at the top of our website.